From the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
It's Friday, August 9th, 2019, and it's the Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and here with me in our Orlando studios on the ones and twos, our illustrious brother, Chandler Strang.
Hello.
On the Skype line from Loverland, Virginia, Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
Joining us from Nashville, Tennessee, Tyler Huckabee.
Howdy, folks.
And that's it. We're rolling
short-handed
today.
Lean and mean.
A little behind the scenes. Apparently, people go on vacation during the summer. So,
apparently, everyone we know. Can I rattle off all the names that are traveling this week?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Annie F. Downs, Eddie Koffeltz, who will be returning from Africa next week. We also have Liz and Bianca, both at the Global Leadership Summit.
Gone. Yeah.
And then we have, who else? Oh, Science Mike is in Alaska.
Gone.
Prop is on tour. Go check out Prop on tour, by the way. His tour just kicked off. Even I even was planning trying to get John Mark McMillan to sit in with us, and he wants to, and he will in a very future week. But this morning would work out for him. This is it, guys. This is it. We're lean and mean. We're SEAL teaming it, is what I call it.
Jesse, precision. How much? I don't know. You can't get into all the details here. I understand that. Okay. And I'm just curious, as somebody who's on the podcast, as somebody who works with you regularly, what order do you call these people?
let that one just be something I hold close to the chest. Let that just be for me to know. There is a ranking. There is a hierarchy. I actually have a chart that I'm looking at right now. And occasionally I flip like it's my Relevant Podcast draft board. And they move up and down the draft. It's like a little fantasy football situation. And I won't tell. And I also have the Dream Squad. It's four names. I will let the listeners decide who those four are. I will never reveal.
Dream Squad, like these are the all-timers.
Yeah, these are the Beatles. This is the Fab Four here.
Yeah.
And
is there like an emergency, only break in case of emergency? Like, well... But do you think it's time for... No, sir, you don't mean... I do mean... We've called everyone else. It's time to break the glass case and pull out... I don't know, who would be like Michelle Obama or something?
Yeah. Usually,
Adam Smith. Adam Smith.
Yeah, in the past, that person's been Adam Smith. But even he's been not available these days. So, yeah, we're riding lean and mean. It's a Friday show. So, everyone just lighten up and get off our back because we're all in delirium here. It's print week. We got a killer issue coming out. But, guys, I don't know what's going to happen today. I feel like I woke up off the rails this morning. So, I don't know where this show's going. That's going to be...
Well, I'll tell you where this show's going. But before I tell you who's coming up later, I want to tell you that today's show is brought to you by Quip. Talk about a segue. Look at that. What's the easiest way to get back into a routine? Start it up before September. Simplify the morning and evenings now with a simpler electric toothbrush from Quip. With Quip, timed sonic vibrations cover the basics, every part of your mouth, and take just 2 minutes twice a day. The mirror mount puts brushing front and center in your bathroom, so you'll remember to book in the day using your new brush. And the lightweight, compact design means you can bring it along with you on those last summer weekend getaways. So enjoy sleeping in and then ease back into the swing of things with a smile. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. They're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals and have thousands of verified 5-star reviews. And brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. A friendly reminder when it's time for a refresh and to stay committed to your oral health. I actually just got my new brush head in the mail this week and popped it on this morning. Look at that. $5. Mm. That's why I love Quip and why it's perfect for getting back into a routine. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/relevant right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/relevant. Well, coming up later, we have a great show in store for you. Matt Carney joins us to talk about his latest release, City of Black and White Revisited.
Yeah.
Matt Carney, everybody. That's
exciting. I'm a big Matt Carney fan. Been a big fan for a long time. You know, me and Matt, during the interview, what was funny is during his first major tour, I was on a tour with Relevant. I was doing like all those music festivals, you know, we're working the booth, and Matt Carney was out on his first tour. So we spent some time together, and we reflected a little, behind the scenes in the interview. It was a good time.
Did he remember you?
He did.
Just a random kid really? Working the festivals? Wow.
Yeah, well, because we ran into each other all the time out
there. Think about how many people he's met since 2005. You know, like that's weird that you made that much of an impression.
I know. Well, I said some unkind things to him back then, and we got in a little scrap, little fisticuffs. I threw up my Jack Johnsons, my old left and right, and we boxed it out. So it was hard to forget. I attacked him back in the day. And that's why.
But seriously, but even think about like how many people he met that summer.
I tend to leave an impression on people.
I like, I why? What happened? Did you guys like fall in the mud together or something? Like what happened that he remembered Jesse Carey, the young whippersnapper from Relevant?
That's right. It was, well, it was a whirlwind summer. I think when we rafted down the Mississippi for those 2 weeks, I think that was pretty rememberable. And then did a stint as riverboat gamblers together. It was a magical Mark Twain type of summer. We both, we escaped from a county jail in Louisiana after a night of some hijinks. And
have you ever, just the plot of Huckleberry Finn? Are you just recounting the Cliff Notes?
Is it, or is this me and Matt Carney's summer together? I don't know. I can't remember. I'm honestly delirious.
Have you ever had a summer like that? Not like Huckleberry Finn, but I mean, have you ever had a summer of just like freedom and making memories and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. When I was a kid.
We're coming out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm living it right now, man. It's August.
Have I?
Dude, my summers as a kid was all about building forts, riding bikes, trespassing.
Did you have a parent at the house?
Not during the day, but it was kind of one of those things like in the summer, the rule was kind of be home when the street lights come on type of situation. Back then they didn't really care.
How old were you? Cause like both of my parents worked. And so my summers were spent like at summer camps or at the office. You know what I mean? Like very structured. I never had that summer. It was just like me and my buddies just went on adventures. Whereas an adult, like, you know, road tripping it for 3 weeks across the country and just doing whatever we felt like. I never had that summer.
Do you mean like the like idyllic childhood summer where you're like out with your like pals running around in the forest building forts, or more like the kind of like younger coming of age summer where you're like going on road trips and you're traveling and like school's out?
None of the above. I've had none of those summers.
Oh, really? Oh, man. See, it's not too late, Cameron.
From ages like 7 to probably like 15, all my summers were the same. And that was playing in the woods, riding bikes, building sketchy ramps and forts, and just coming home whenever, sleeping at buddies' houses, the whole deal. In college, I had a summer where I like backpacked in Eastern Europe, which was really fun. That was like 2 months. But I don't know if I've had like that kind of summer in a while now. But it is a young man's game. Listen, here's the thing, Cameron. You haven't done it. This needs to happen. I'm going to call Matt Carney, and me, you, and him are going to have we're going to revisit it just like me and him had. It's going to be City of Black and White, whatever, revisited. Me and you and Matt Carney, Cameron. You
know,
what do you
say? You know I'm down. You know I would do this in a heartbeat. The problem is children. We have children. Yeah. And it's like we, and you and I have gone on trips where we've had a blast, but it's like, after about like 3 days, you need to get home to see the family. You know what I mean?
So it's like, here's what we do. We do a little Freaky Friday situation because I don't have kids. So I just live this sort of hot boy summer you're talking about here. I'll be willing for the sake of, because I want my friends to have good things. Yeah. I'll be Cohen's dad for next summer. I'll just take over.
You just need one of those Mission Impossible mask things.
A Mission Impossible mask. And you and Jesse and Matt go out and have yourselves a summer to remember, one for the record books.
Cameron, my kids are young enough when, like later in life, they're like, hey, remember that one summer where your dad left for like the entire summer and didn't come back and was just frolicking down the Mississippi, getting into all sorts of misadventures? They're like, no, I don't remember that. And guess what? They're not going to remember. They're too young. I could leave for a summer and they won't even remember I left for a summer.
My son is old enough that he would be scarred for life and have feelings of abandonment. And so...
I'm hurt that you think that my parenting skills are so poor that you would be scarred for life. I think I can keep, I'm sure it would be difficult, but I think he would be okay.
Three days in, Cohen informs you he's scarred for life. Just 3 days with inside the mind of Tyler Huckabee.
Are you envisioning the latex mask that prisoner who tried to escape prison by dressing up as his visiting daughter?
Did you see that?
It went viral this week. Did you hear the tragic ending to that story?
I did. It was terrible.
They found him dead in his cell the next day.
Super sad.
Yeah, that is pretty sad. I'm going to turn to something less sad.
Our story would not end like that.
Okay,
that
that's what I was trying to get to.
I can't promise you there won't be some death out on the road. I know me and Matt Carney had one wild night that we both took a vow never to speak of again. And so I'm just going to breeze past the one dark moment of that summer. But Cameron, why didn't he just come along with us? You know, I think if, you know, setting up him and Tyler in a Mission Impossible mask to look like you, if we all determine that's a bad idea, why did he just join us for the summer of merriment?
He's close to that age. He is close. Next year I might bring him to Montana with us. Not with us, but he could like stay with the family.
Yeah.
You know, nearby.
Yeah.
But
oh, he'd love it. He'd love it.
That's kind of our frolicking is the Montana trip.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But it's only like 3.5 days.
I know.
That's the problem with adulthood is you only get spurts of frolics.
We need a whole summer to get into all kinds of trouble. I'm thinking a cross country crime spree, guys. Let's up the stakes on this a little. You know, harmless stuff. Some burglaries, like cat burglaries, not like home invasion.
Like stealing the cooling pies off the windowsill, that sort of thing.
That sort of, yeah.
Exactly.
A little bandana. Yeah.
Or you know what we should do, guys? Old fashioned heist. Let's find a cool museum with some rubies or something. And, you know, Tyler, I feel like Cameron, do you feel like Tyler's kind of the driver in this gang, in this situation?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I feel like he'd be down, but like he wouldn't want to go like take the rubies. Like, I feel like, yeah. I'll wait outside.
Very surprising. I would love some rubies. So I'm obviously down, but I do feel like I'm pretty handy behind the wheel.
I feel like I am more of a combination of like the brains, the muscle, and the looks in the gang. Yeah. Cameron, you're more the wild card type of situation, I think. Okay. I think that's how this gang's break. We need one. Cohen can be the guy that hacks into the mainframe. Cohen is Tyler's driving the van.
Is it all set up on a Wii? Like, what kind of mainframe are they talking about?
Tyler's driving the van. It says like our florist van, right, Cameron? Cohen's in the back hacking into the security cameras and putting them on a loop so that by the time they even know that we hit them, we're long gone with the loot, with the rubies, and our crime spree continues. Guys, this is going to be the best summer ever. Best summer ever.
This is what happens when we can't get a nice, credible guest to join the
we
cast.
We start planning heists
because we're bored during the summer.
In the heist, Annie would be a great. She could be like the person who knows all the karate. I don't think Annie knows karate, but let's just say for the sake of this heist, she does.
No, Annie's like the Catherine Zeta-Jones character. She dresses up in the fancy gown,
like distracts the guards,
and like flits her eyelashes at the guards. They get distracted while Jesse tumbles by or whatever he does. He does his somersaults in the corner to like get past the guards. You know what I'm saying?
That's when I dance through the laser field in a highly choreographed
because Annie F. Downs is flirting with the on guard night.
And they're
watchman.
Like, excuse me, ma'am. I'm going to come back to you one sec. There's a guy over there appearing to try to dance through our laser field. And so I'm going to watch him fall and hurt himself. And then we'll swoop in for the arrest. Run, Annie, run. We need a master of disguise. We need a master of disguise in the gang, too.
Yeah.
You know, just I feel like that always comes in
well,
handy.
Well, Eddie has a proclivity for the musical theater. I'm sure he has.
That's true.
I feel like
a guy in full Cats regalia would still set off some alarm bells. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, quite literally. There's a tail. It's going to wag right over the motion sensor. Like the literal alarm bell. So, yeah.
Jesse, we were talking before we started recording here, and you brought up something that you thought might make for some good band. You just gave us the headline.
Okay.
I got to know more, man.
Okay, has this happened to you guys? Because it's happened to me like three times and it's starting to get weird. Okay, I'm either at, it happens at one of two places, and it honestly makes me want to not go there, because I'm not a person who gets uncomfortable in social circumstances. I'm a pretty social person.
Sure.
I don't mind talking with strangers, right? So this happens at Target and Barnes & Noble, and I'm there shopping, you know, or doing whatever, just picking up a couple things, and I get approached, and it's usually like an older dude, like kind of an old man, and he's always very friendly, and they're always, all three times, they come up and they're very complimentary of me. You know, they know nothing about me, but they look like, hey, you look like someone who's pretty successful in life. It seems like you're doing pretty well. They know nothing about me. And trust me, I do not dress like someone who you would presume is doing all that well. Like, I look like someone who spends most of their free times planning fictional Ruby heist. Okay. This person has no reason to believe I'm doing all that well.
Wait,
in life.
So you've transitioned. Tyler asked you a question. You've transitioned into an actual thing that's happening in your life. This is not another one of your Ruby heist-esque things. I just want to clarify, because you deliver the stories with the same earnestness. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't tell by your tone when you're talking about complete malarkey or you're actually saying this happened to my life. Okay, so this actually, what you're about to tell us is actually happening to you.
Yeah, I follow the 80-20 rule, which is 80% of the time I just lie to people, and 20% it's truth, and this is in the 20 window.
Gotcha.
And these people, these dudes just come up to me and we get to talking, and it always comes around. They have like a business opportunity for me, and they seem like I'm the type of guy that they would like to partner with. They've known me for like 3 minutes, and all of a sudden they want to go into business with me. And it always comes down and it's some kind of like MLM meeting, like a multi-level marketing scheme, you know, like some sort of like weird, like sports marketing thing. That requires me to give them a bunch of money to get some kind of starter kit. Does this ever happen to you guys? Or do I just have the face of someone who's very gullible? I don't know why. It's like, I feel like I got a big target on my back. Does this happen to either of you guys, Chandler, anybody?
No.
Literally never, ever once. I don't think I've ever spoken to a stranger in a retail environment in my life.
Oh, I talk to them all the time.
Well, that's happened.
That's your problem. That's your problem.
But I've never been approached about an opportunity. That's never happened.
These ones, I'm not approaching these guys, because these don't look like the type of people I would just approach. They look like people who got in a little too deep on a multi-level marketing scheme and are desperately trying to find a way out. That's what they look like visually. They look a little frazzled, but I don't know what it is about me. Do I look like someone who is easily bamboozled? Is that what it is? I need your guys' help understanding why I'm getting targeted for harassment.
How often are you at these places? Is this just a law of averages? Like, you're there so much that you're bound to have some interesting experiences?
I barely ever go to any store. Sure. I try to avoid retail settings at all costs. Every time I go, this is happening.
Maybe you look like lost and confused and bewildered by your environment, so you look vulnerable. You know what
Easy
I'm
mark.
Yeah.
Easy.
Because you don't go to retail enough, you're taken in by the wonder and awe of it. You're like a visitor to New York City walking the sidewalks by looking up with great wonder at the tall buildings. Well, clearly I can just glance at you and know that you're a tourist. You know what I'm saying?
And That's you at Target.
That's true.
Yeah. It's you at Target.
Yeah.
Maybe you need a little rebranding. You need to walk in with confidence. You need to walk in with a mission. Like, you need a purposeful.
You're going to have to help me out. Does that mean like cutting the sleeves off my shirt? Like, what does that mean
I think it's more of an energy, just kind of the vibe you're putting out. Like, this is a guy who does not have time to hear about my multi-level marketing scheme. This man is too busy. He's got too many plates spinning as it is.
Do either of you, Cameron, do you think facial hair would help? I'm grasping a straw.
I think it's your gait. I think it's your pace in the store. I think Tyler was right. I think you are a wanderer. You look like you're making eye contact with strangers because you like to chit chat. You're for the social experience of hanging out at Target with everybody else. You're there to enjoy yourself.
That's right.
I go into Target, grab the basket, in and out in 4 minutes flat, and I bought 3 shirts, the week's groceries, and a couple of toys. Like, I'm in and out, 4 minutes. You're there for 45 and you're dilly-dallying. That's the problem.
Plan. Yeah. Like, what are you doing today? Going to Target. It's a whole day thing. I'm going to get a coffee. I'm going to get a delicious Starbucks. I'm going to do one lap around the store, just check out what's new. Then I'll start the shopping.
That's your problem.
I'll see what's new with the Chip and Joe collection.
Right. No.
You know, like, you see if they got the new, they got Halloween candy out yet. I like to do a lap just to kind of get my bearings. You guys don't do that?
You're like the old guys who hang out at McDonald's for breakfast. They're there all morning. They're there to chit chat. They're going to show up. They're going to chit chat. That's you at Target, and that's why you're the mark. Those guys have been hanging out there. They're like, this guy's one of us.
It was a delightful place to hang out, just like McDonald's in the morning, until these, you know, pyramid schemes started ruining the whole scene. It's ridiculous. I gotta get a new look.
Maybe you go in with your own multi-level marketing scheme, ready to go, sort of a like chaff in the air. Like, yeah, like, hey, I've got an opportunity for you.
Moils.
I've got an opportunity for you.
Hey, listen, I got
essential oils for men. Moils.
Listen, I got an opportunity for you. I was talking with a couple of buddies of mine about the summer plans we got. Turns out we don't have a master of disguise in the crew. So we got a hacker, got a getaway driver, definitely got a couple wild cards. Obviously, you're looking at the muscle, the brains, and the looks. So what do you say, Ian? You got any disguises? We're going to need them. It's good advice, guys.
All right. Well, moving the show along. Stay tuned. Up next, it's The Hot List. Nice to know.
When you call yourself a Christian but don't let that title become an identity, it's time for an adjustment. In Dean Del Sesto's newest book, Shift Your Thinking for a Deeper Faith, you'll find hard-hitting truths and powerful perspective shifts to unlock the potential you already have. Dean Del Sesto wants to help you access the spiritual tools, abilities, and assets you have at your disposal. Strong faith isn't something you arrive at. It's a constant journey. Let this book equip you for that journey. Pick up your copy of Shift Your Thinking for a Deeper Faith today.
You're listening to The Hype by 21 Pilots, the alt mix. The alt mix. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard Let Go by Judah and the Lion. I think that's the new college football song.
I just got a press release. The headline: Judah and the Lions Let Go, chosen as ESPN's new college football anthem for the 2019-2010 season, or 2020 season. Cameron, I don't want to brag or take credit, but weren't they just in Relevant magazine opening up about how they went from a worship band to this, you know, breakout indie rock group? Isn't that weird?
I just got the lineup for Austin City Limits Music Festival in October. There's 2 weeks, kind of like Coachella. Yeah. And Judah and the Lion are, you got like the headlining, you know how the posters list go. You know, you got the headliners at the big font. Then you got the main stagers in the medium font.
Yeah.
And you got everybody else in the small font. They're in the medium font. Judah and the Lion.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good. Those are usually my favorites. Like headliners are usually a little too big. And,
I don't know. Childish Gambino is one of the.
Childish. So, yeah. The exception that proves the rule.
Yeah, dude, that was when we were at Lollapalooza. His evening headlining concert was unbelievable in my mind. Jesse less impressed. I was blown away because it was like he has grown. Like, I wasn't a big Childish Gambino fan when he first started out because I thought it was like shtick, like rap, like
totally,
almost like
totally
joke rap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Totally.
But now he's like Teddy Pendergrass, and the way he commanded the stage, it was like a soul concert with a live band. And he would have like these interludes where he's just kind of talking to the crowd and the band's playing, and then he'd morph into the next song. And he just had command of it. Like, if you saw old concert footage of Teddy Pendergrass, it was something to behold. Jesse's kind of like, he talked a lot. I don't know.
Yeah, it was very chatty, which I know he's an actor and a stand-up comedian and a brilliant person, but you know, I'm there to see music, you know? I don't need a lecture on phone etiquette. Childish Gambino. Thanks, though. Like when artists are like, all right, put the phone away. Let's share an experience. Look how many people are looking at their phones right now. It's like, okay, I, I, thanks, Dad. I didn't come here to get told about my phone habits. Just play some tunes, man. Let's have some fun. You liked the banter though, Cameron.
I did. To me, it was like he just was a maestro and he had control of the entire concert and he held 100,000 people with rapt attention, minus one. 99,999 people. Jesse Carey. Me.
To be fair, I was looking at my phone. I was drawing up heist plans on my phone and I didn't want to be told now's not the time. So
you were too distracted. And this is why you always get approached about these multi-level marketing schemes. You couldn't focus. You're never in the moment, Jesse.
Well, it's time for...
I guess so. It's the hot list. The hot
list. It's sizzling. See, speaking of Teddy Pendergrass and Childish Gambino, that would have fit right in to his headlining set.
Very smooth. Very smooth.
Very smooth. Except he would have like strung that out for about 7 minutes. He would have he would have felt it. Kind of like let it ebb and flow, you know what I mean? He would have,
and then he would have talked about stuff.
He would have talked about stuff.
I get it, man. I get it. What's the next song? Let's go. Oh, let's go. Up.
No, it was genius. What are you talking about? Oh man, I could palpably feel Jesse's antsiness, and I'm sitting there like
I'm looking around. I'm like, guys, is anyone else sitting through this? this is TED Talk here. I know we signed up for that.
It was brilliant. It was so good. I didn't want it to end. Jesse was like,
play some songs, Gladwell. I get it. We're sharing a moment. I get it. There's a lot of us. We all have phones. It's technology, man. I know. Just play.
This is interesting because this is the reverse of how I feel like you guys usually take things in. Like Jesse be the one who's more, you're a little bit chattier. You're more open to people kind of like meandering a little bit. And Cameron to be more like, it's a performance. This is what they've got a job to do. They've got a, and I feel like this is a rare reversal of type.
Well, Cameron has a love for old soul. And I have a love for not being bored. And when Childish Gambino jumps on the ground, starts taking selfies for 5 minutes and, just pontificating about the state of, of culture, it's really something. It had been a long day, and I was just ready for some tunes. That's all.
Stupid. All right, coming in at number five this week on the hot list, Lauren Daigle, who also played Lollapalooza last week, toppled Maroon 5 for a Billboard record. Her single "You Say" this week took the number one spot on the adult contemporary charts, unsettling Maroon 5's "Girls Like You." It's no small feat. "Girls Like You" held the chart's all time record after being number one for 33 straight weeks. Lauren's hit is now the only song in history to top both the adult contemporary and Christian airplay charts. I'm surprised Amy Grant didn't do that.
Yeah.
From Billboard magazine, they said, "You Say" concurrently tops the airplay, streaming, and sales-based Hot Christian Songs chart for a 54th week, a reign second only to the 61-week domination of Hillsong United's "Oceans" from 2013 to 15. "Look Up, Child" has also been the top Christian album for 42 weeks.
Crazy. I just want to state something that's probably obvious now. You know, Drew the Lions in the MAC, and now all of a sudden they got the College Game Day Song of the Year.
Right.
Lauren Daigle is on the cover. And guess what? She's toppling Maroon 5. And thankfully, we no longer have to live in a country where Maroon 5's the number one song. You know, I don't want to take credit for these things. But who held the previous record? Oh, Hillsong United. That's weird. You know who's been on our cover? I'm not saying that we are kingmakers. I'm just saying we are king and queen makers because both these artists, you know, they're just blowing up. You know,
and did you happen to see who was the number two trending topic on Twitter this very morning?
No,
our Tori Kelly. You might remember Tori Kelly from just a few months ago being on the cover of Relevant magazine. She has a new album out today, rocketed her to the top of the charts. You're welcome for that, Tori Kelly. Oh, and who did Lauren Daigle's album? Who was the previous record holder for the top of the Christian charts? Whose album did she? Do you remember, Jesse, who that was?
Yeah, it was United, right?
Well, no, the album. Yeah, not the song, not a single song.
Oh,
not
no, Oceans, no, I can't album, remember.
Oh, that was just Switchfoot, Beautiful Letdown. Switchfoot, also been on the cover of Relevant magazine. It's hard. It's a lot of responsibility to choose who's going to be next. We take that responsibility seriously.
Listen, when our time is so valuable, okay? I don't have time for the chitter chatter. Play me the hits, man. Play the hits and let's get on to it. We got business to do here, you know?
All right, coming in number four this week, Chance the Rapper credits celibacy, baptism, and marriage for changing his life. He was recently a guest on Nicki Minaj's Apple Music show, Queen Radio. By the way, the number one radio show on Beats One.
Oh, wow.
Nicki Minaj.
Good for her. Good for her.
Her episode 2 weeks ago was the most downloaded and streamed show ever on Beats One.
Who was the guest that week?
She was like, I don't remember, but I was listening last weekend and she said last week's show was, I don't know who was the guest, but
wow,
it's kind of crazy. Yeah,
I know.
She's a pretty gifted conversational. Like
she really has.
Whatever that thing is that makes you just interesting to listen, have a conversation with somebody else. Nicki has definitely got it.
But she records it. Have you ever heard it? She records it like literally they hit record and she's just like at the salon or she's getting her hair done or she's eating lunch.
Yeah.
Like before something like, oh, we have this like photo shoot this afternoon. Well, we got to record our Beats One show before we do that. So while we're getting ready, we'll just record it. So it's like she's like literally like something will happen off mic or somebody's mic's not turned on. It's like one take. Yeah. They don't do any editing to it. I'm like, how is this the number one show on Beats One?
It's the podcast of the future. It's where we're going.
I do think, I mean, this is a separate conversation, but I think that to some degree, like podcasting has changed expectations for what radio is. Like, I think people have gotten really accustomed to a more of like an informal type of setup where, you know, if you listen to like NPR or something, you know, everything's there. There might be there's some conversation, but a lot of it's scripted. It's all on like a really tight time. You know, like an interview is not going to last more than just a few minutes unless you're listening to like Terry Gross or something. But if you go listen to like Maron or Joe Rogan or any of the, you know, those big podcasts, you know, the guys are getting up in the middle to go to the bathroom and they just leave the mics on. They'll just be like, all right, hang on one sec. I'm going to go grab a water. And they just let it run. I think it's kind of changed how a lot of people think about listening to audio content to a degree.
Outside of like Terry Gross, who is on the Mount Rushmore of interviewers.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite interviewer to listen to? Not like for a written piece, but like to listen to the conversation.
Yeah. Man, that's a great question.
Mine is Zane Lowe from Beats One.
Mm.
He does better music interviews than anybody I've ever heard. Like, because artists are a lot of times really difficult to talk to. Because like, think about it. Like, you're a musician or whatever, and you're going to ask me about the lyric of the whatever. Like, I don't want to talk about that. Like, he does a great job pulling out fascinating conversations with artists. I think Zane Lowe is amazing.
I think over the years, I've actually kind of learned a lot from, I would say, Marc Maron, just because I feel like up to then, you know, obviously I have a journalism degree and interview people every single day almost, you know. And so the way that I had like always approached interviews was from the way that I sort of been taught and the way that you kind of are taught to do it, you know, when you're learning the craft of journalism. But when you listen to someone, the reason I've gotten a lot about Marc Maron is because he doesn't come from that world. You know, he's a, you know, previously a stand-up comedian, and he has such genuine interest in his subjects. And the conversations always get really, really personal. And I mean, people go on there and they cry sometimes, and there's just a like, it doesn't sound like you're listening to an interview. It sounds like you get to be a fly on the wall with a really intimate in like a really intimate conversation. And Cameron, I think to a degree, you've tapped into that with Unedited too, where it's not like going into the interview, you have this big agenda, you know, where Terry Gross, if she's talking to someone, she has her line of questions, right? She has an agenda, but like I've come to appreciate interviews that let the interview be whatever it wants to be. You know, I've gotten a lot of listen to those type of conversations.
I'm not able to listen to Marc Maron because it has an E on it and I have the filters. But I was really influenced by early episodes of Alec Baldwin's podcast.
Yeah.
Where he would kind of go wherever they were. He'd be backstage at a play if he's talking to the actor or whatever. And he would, and again, I haven't listened in a couple of years, and you know, this is always the difficult part, is keeping the level high. But like in the earliest episodes, it was like a who's who of people he was fascinated by. And and the genuine curiosity of what they did and the connection he had to whatever it was that they were doing came through. And it was fascinating. And then I heard a couple episodes where I could tell he wasn't as interested in the person.
Yeah.
And it definitely fell flat. And that's where it started. And so like for when we started unedited, it was like, that's the key. Is like, we cannot dilute this thing just to hit a quota of volume. We need to make sure that the conversations are honestly only people that I genuinely am interested in. And that's no disrespect to anybody that we haven't had on, but it's just like, there's a difference. You get just in that format, you know, I mean, any journalist can extract good quotes from a subject, you know, but in that format, there needs to be a genuine level of interest. It's fascinating to me that Mark Maron's been able to maintain it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because he's been doing two episodes a week for years now. Tyler, who's your favorite interviewer?
You know, I was thinking about it. We've brought up a lot of the, like, I think Maron's really great. And I think I've talked about how much I appreciate Colbert's style of interviewing. I think he's got a real gift for. I've learned a lot from Colbert watching him interview. But somebody who I've really appreciated lately, I don't know about favorite, but just that I've been learning a lot from, and I don't feel like he's quite gotten the credit he deserves for this yet, is Trevor Noah. On what he does sometimes with his guests that I think very few people are able to do as well as he is challenge them. I think he's at his most interesting when he's talking to somebody he disagrees with, because he can be very open about it and he can push back in a way that still feels very professional and gentle without pushing people into a corner or boxing them in a way that can really escalate things. I think that's a really tough thing to do, especially in front of a studio audience. And it's something that I've been trying to get a little better on myself as an interviewer. And I think his methods of doing that have been helpful for me.
Yeah. John Stewart was a master of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John was great at that.
I miss John Stewart.
I miss John.
In the lexicon.
We could really use him right now.
Well, back to the hot list. Well, Chance was on Nicki Minaj's Apple Music show called Queen Radio. Well, they started discussing faith. So Nicki said that after Kanye West told her that he'd become a, quote, born-again Christian, she started to notice changes in him. She said, my first instinct was, I'm so proud of you, because I could see there's a peace that he has now that just surpasses everything, and that's what I find God gives you. And I love when I see men that are man enough to embrace God. Chance then opened up about his own faith journey and the role that his wife has played in his spiritual growth. Back in March, Chance married his longtime girlfriend, Kirsten Corley. During the interview, he explained how songs on his new album, The Big Day, were inspired by his relationship with his wife, who encouraged him to remain celibate before their wedding. He said, I explained that my wife literally saved my life by becoming celibate and going and getting baptized. It changed my life for real, and now I know exactly where my strength comes from. And this is all after I proclaimed I love Jesus and stuff. So there you go. Yeah. Queen Radio.
Yeah. And I feel like that sense of like joy and celebration really comes out on The Big Day, Chance's album.
It does for sure.
You know, it doesn't have maybe some of like the emotional complexities that some of his mixtapes do, but I feel like, you know, for just trying to capture unbridled joy, I feel like the album does a pretty good job of that.
No, I agree. I'd say that's definitely, like, you can't doubt his sincerity, for sure.
Yeah, it's very earnest. It's very earnest. It's
definitely an extremely earnest and honest album, which I think, like we talked about last time on the pod, might kind of play into some of the hurt feelings that he has, because it's one thing if you're like, well, I didn't really care about that one anyway, so who cares if you don't like it? But if you're being very earnest and people don't like it, then it just feels like a review of yourself.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, man. I didn't even think of it like that. It's like, I love my wife. I love God. You suck.
If I wrote something that was meaningful and deeply true about like my wife, people were like, nice sentiment, but that really sucked. And then I'd be like,
it's okay. You didn't like the feature that I wrote on Judah the Lion, but if I wrote a feature about my life and you told me that sucked, yeah, that probably wouldn't feel too good. But it's literally just my story. Yeah, it sucks. It's terrible. Yeah,
it's a bad story.
You went riverboat gambling with Matt Kearney for a whole summer? This is terrible.
There's not a whole novel there. It's a short story at best.
Coming in number three this week, speaking of Kanye West, he went full youth pastor at the latest Sunday service by changing the lyrics to secular songs. Oh, so clips from a recent Sunday service show the choir singing Nirvana songs with the lyrics swapped out for some Christian ones, successfully swerving into the lane pioneered by youth pastors in the 90s. Among the newly redeemed lyrics of Come As You Are, you know, come as you are, it's Just Confess, He'll Do the Rest, Christ Is Here, Hallelujah. And to the tune
Hallelujah.
of Smells Like Teen Spirit, the crew sang, Let Your Light Shine, It's Contagious. Here We Are Now, Inspiration.
It's bad.
Oh, wow.
Here's a clip. Listen at your own risk. You can't unhear it. You can't unhear it.
Now's the time. Hurry up. The choice is yours. Don't be late. Just confess, He'll do the rest. Christ is here.
Oh, wow.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Chandler, as a palate cleanser, can you just fire up Baby Got Book again? I know we did it a couple weeks ago, but that's the only one that ever really did this well.
It's hard to know where to go from that one.
Honestly, it's making me lose some respect for Kanye West. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, really? Was this the bridge too far?
This is the
straw that broke the camel's back.
Artistically, I just don't get it.
I think we've talked about this. I defended Kanye for a long time. You know, I was the one who was, even when other people were starting to waver, I was like, oh, but he'll always have, and he does have, you know, Beautiful Twisted and 808s and all that. But man,
this went too far.
This is why Jesse got kicked out of Sunday service. He was there just play the songs, play the real songs, play the hits.
Is Sia here? Is she hiding somewhere? Sia, help us! This is terrible. They're singing Christian versions of Nirvana songs that aren't even good.
We're good, Joel Houston. Wrap it up.
Don't we get like free Yeezys or something? Can we just get to that? Do I get to pick a? Do I tell you the size? How does this work?
Yeah. How does this work?
I wear an 11 in Adidas. Is that help? Yeah.
Coming in at number two this week, yeah, Saint Laurent North America president Brent Kreider told Levi Lesko about his miraculous salvation experience this week. The fashion industry mogul and DJ, who's also worked with Prada and Armani, was a guest on Levi's YouTube series War with Friends, where he plays the card game War and interviews people about their faith stories. Brandt explained that back in 1996, he attended a Promise Keepers event in Denver. At the time, he said he was searching for a deeper meaning in life, and he had his massive divine experience while watching the sunset. He said, I began weeping uncontrollably. I wasn't a crier. His last name is Kreider, not Crier. I was not a crier, and I heard a voice whisper to me, I am the answer that you've been looking for. I gave my life over to God at that point, and it changed my life forever. I went on this radical pursuit of him, and that's when it started for me. He also talked about combining his faith with his passion for the fashion industry. Here's a clip.
He, for me, even before I really got to know him, I found him to be so wild and powerful and strong and unabashed. And like, I found his pursuit of me and us way more real and passionate and tactile and multidimensional than beige, you know what I mean? And
although Kanye's done well with it,
turned it nice.
It's,
you know,
the beige is the new,
you know,
black.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you. That to do something for Jesus, it can't be inspiring.
Right.
That Christian music needs to be crappy secular music, but with a Christian fish on the cover.
Right. Like,
this idea, what we should be innovating, because if we have God who breathes out stars in us, this should be the best thing ever.
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 The greatest ideas on earth, the greatest event on earth, the greatest, like, we have kind of the answer to life's questions.
Hello.
that it's all right there, and he's amazing, and he's big, and he's strong, and he's actually completely in love with every one of us. And so I kind of went on this love pursuit of him, and he just kind of,
and that made you better at what you did, not worse.
Yeah, because he, like, once you kind of get his love inside you, your ability to love other people is so much easier. I think it would be challenging at times to give people the love and grace that they kind of need if I didn't have him kind of fueling it inside of me. You know, I think that's sometimes how people feel so anxious and the world feels a little thin. It's just, he's really the endless source and spring of life itself.
Yeah, it was a really good interview.
You know, I can understand the kind of impetus there to jump in and defend Kanye's use of beige there, but a word of wisdom to Levi Lesko. Stop trying to defend Kanye now, man. That's a dark road to exercise in futility. You'll regret. The sooner you get off that boat, the happier you'll be.
Coming in number one this week on the hot list, Mr. Rogers' Look for the Helpers video made the rounds again this weekend in the wake of two mass shootings. Years ago, the late children's show host and Presbyterian minister was asked about what to say to kids who find themselves scared about what they are seeing in the news. In the days following two tragic mass shootings, that clip and Mr. Rogers' simple yet profound advice about finding the good in humanity has resurfaced again. Here's the clip.
You know, my mother used to say a long time ago, whenever there would be any really catastrophe that was in the movies or on the air, she would say, always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines. That's why I think that if news programs could make a conscious effort of showing rescue teams, of showing who medical people, anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy, to be sure that they include that. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
I saw a really interesting take on, you know, someone writing about this video this week and about how, you know, seeing this as an adult versus seeing it as a child is, you know, when you're an adult, this should be an encouragement to be one of the helpers, be one of the people that are running in to help people, to serve people, and to be one of the voices that, and one of the people that people who are frightened can look to and be like, okay, I can have some hope in humanity because these people are doing good in light of something terrible. And so I think, yeah, as encouraging as that advice is for children, I think it's also a real call as an adult to be a helper, be someone that people can look to and get some hope from.
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for
It's the hot list, the hot list. It's sizzling.
So we'll stay tuned. Up next, Matt Carney goes on a caper with Jason. Listening to Sea of Victory by Elevation Worship. The single is actually part of a new 5-song EP that releases on August 30th called At Midnight. Ironically, it'll probably release At Midnight on August 30th. It's called At Midnight. You can stream Sea of Victory wherever you listen to music and be sure to pre-add or pre-save At Midnight. It's going to be great. Well, Matt Carney is a singer and songwriter who recently released his new EP that revisits his album, City of Black and White, 10 years after the initial release. We spoke with Matt about the new EP, the power of being honest in music, the stories behind some of his most well-known songs, and that summer he wrestled with Jesse in the Mud. Here is part of Jesse's conversation with Matt Carney.
Listen to Sade playing on the radio, sipping on your latte, drawing on your window. You feel like second nature, read it in your eyes. I don't need it down on paper. I got you memorized. I got you memorized.
I was thrilled when I saw that you were revisiting the City of Black and White. How come you wanted to kind of revisit some of these songs and kind of do a fresh take on them?
You know, I think it was, I actually wanted to do it on Nothing Left to Lose and just didn't for some reason, like creatively, just where I was at, it was more of an idea and it just never like happened. And this one came around. I was like, man, City of Black and White's going to be 10 years old. And I was listening to the record, which is funny. I hadn't listened to it in probably 5 or 6 years as an album, which is a whole nother thing. Once I finish a record, I find I actually don't ever listen to it again, which is kind of odd. But I was thinking, like, it's odd that I don't listen. I haven't listened forever. And I put it on. I was like, man, these songs are kind of like, they feel timeless in a sense of like their lyric isn't bound to like some era or season. And I was like, man, these songs would really stand up if we like redid them.
Yeah.
And it would be fun to explore that again. And starting my own independent label was part of it. I was like, man, well, I could own this recording. That'd be kind of fun to redo my own record and then like actually be the record label behind it. So yeah, there was a bunch of different reasons to explore it. And I got a buddy, this guy named JT Roach, who I was a fan of his stuff. And I said, hey, will you come to Nashville and let's just camp out for a week? And we did most of the recording in about 6 days. So just literally threw paint at the project and kind of surfaced and said, is this any good? And we're like, wow, we really like this. All I have, all I have, all I have, well, you know it's yours. Every breath, every step, every moment I'm looking for. All I have, all I have, all I have is yours. And you watching my heart break a little bit more. Watching my heart break a little bit more.
Hopefully going out of order is okay, because I want to start with Closer to Love, because I remember that song so specifically. I remember the video for it and everything, and it's got this great narrative to it. You know, can you tell me a little bit about the story behind Closer to Love and even how it evolved when you kind of did this new version, which I feel like is more intimate this time around?
Yeah, I think we wanted to strip it down because it was the single. It was the biggest pop song, I guess, on that record. And so like something about pulling it back and making it more rooted in just acoustic guitar and chill felt like a tension that was kind of fun to play with, to make it a new thing. But yeah, speaking of Tyler Burkham, he had said something to me once. He'd had kids fairly early in. He said something like, one day you'll realize you're just one phone call away from like your knees. Or he said something along those lines. And I was like, you know, every poet's a thief. And I said, man, that's a great line. That is a song. And I ran with it. And like, we just was taught, I think, you know, my wife is part of that character. That don't apologize for all the tears you cry. It's like, she still apologizes every time tears. I'm like, why are you like, you're like, that always seemed odd to me. Like you're experiencing a very real emotion. Like, why are you apologizing for that? You know? And so there's some of her character in there. There's like, but the person, that person in that's, that it's, isn't one person. It's not like this literal story. I remember I was staying on my manager's boat in Chicago. When I wrote some of the lyrics, I was sleeping in this like, you know, basically like a sleeping bag on this boat on Lake Michigan. And that's kind of where some of the second verse comes from, but just felt like this person that like, is in need and in like this desperate place, but like, it's kind of holding on to hope is a lot of like a place I love to write out of. And it was something I saw in my own life and in people around me's life. And that song kind of just kind of fell this guy out of that, from that idea.
Once again, down off Lake Michigan, where we could feel the storm blowing down with the wind. And don't apologize for all the tears you've cried. You've been way too strong now for all your life. We're gonna get there soon. She's gonna be there too, crying in her room, praying love come through.
The other song I wanted to talk about, and again, man, I've been a big fan of these songs for a long time, so it's fun to kind of get some of the backstory. But Fire and Rain, like,
yeah,
that's one I remember playing that one a lot. Can you tell me a little bit? And I think that's what even the title references attention. And that's what I think I like about the selections that you made is like, there is sort of this like emotional wrestling match in a lot of these songs, you know, which the delivery, it comes across as like so smooth and fun to listen to. But when you really dig in, you know, it has that sort of complexity there. Tell me a little bit about the backstory with Fire and Rain.
Fire and Rain was really written about a friend of mine. And, you know, there was like this kind of, I'm going to go down this path that's like, destructive to myself. And I know it is, but I'm going to do it anyways, was kind of like some of the conversations we'd had in that season of life. So I ended up writing it to him kind of as this like, hey man, I know you're going to like down this path of destruction, like that, you know, is too, and we all know, and all your community does. But I'm here for you. And like, if you need something, you know, there's like this, I know in the back of your mind, you know what's going on and you know what's right for you. And like, it was kind of, that was the characters in my own life. And then obviously when you have that, then when you start writing a song, there's like some fiction and there's some, it becomes something bigger, you know, maybe it's like, you don't just write, I don't know. It's like no great song is just this literal thing. It's like, it becomes this drama that unfolds with images in your head. And I love that song. I love some of the lines in that song. The line about, you know, went down to your street, could still feel the old heat. Like, I always love that line. It's like, there's definitely those places in your life, you turn down a street or you go by someone's house or this like coffee shop or something. And it's like, oh man, I feel that wrestling in that moment we had, you know, together. And so it's kind of playing with those ideas.
Do you ever think about me? Do you ever call my name? Ask me now, I'll give you the reasons my love will not fade through the fire and rain.
That was Matt Carney. Stay tuned. Up next, it's fire Ask the Cast, the light edition.
It's always you.
Are you sick of all the doom and gloom predictions about church decline, culture wars, and moral corruption? What if all of this secularization is actually good news for the church? And what if what appears to some like a dark hour is actually a rare opportunity? Mark Sayers, the Australian pastor who co-hosts this Cultural Movement podcast with John Mark Comer, wrote a book showing that cultural movements like ours often precede spiritual awakening. He'll show you why there's lots of reasons to hope and how you can prepare yourself and your community to be agents of renewal in the world. The book is Reappearing Church. Check it out today.
Oh, I wish I didn't get your name tattooed on my heart. Oh, I wish I didn't get your name tattooed on my heart.
You're listening to Tattooed on My Heart by Bishop Briggs. Okay, it's time for...
If you got something you want to know, now's the time to ask. It's Ask the Cast.
All right, so you guys, we ask you, this happens about once a week. We'll go on to the Twitter, you know, the old Twitter. We'll fire it up and we'll say, hey, you got any questions for the cast? Hit us up. You guys hit us up at Relevant Podcast. Here's a few of the questions. I will lob them to the light crew. Maybe Chandler should join in.
I think he should. I absolutely think he should. Before we get underway, I need to clear something up about the Matt Carney interview.
Yeah.
I think there's been some confusion.
Yeah.
I was thinking you guys this whole time been referring to the artist Matt Carney. Yeah. I was referring to my summer with my friend Matt the Carney, who is a rambunctious circus Carney that I ended up palling around with for a while. Yeah. So Matt the Carney, he'll be on next week. My apologies to Matt Carney, the artist. Great EP, by the way. Yeah. So
Stacey Drake asked, she said she accidentally started a bit of a prank war at work involving rubber chicken finger flingers. rubber chicken finger flingers. Okay. But she's looking to up her game. Yep. Any office prank advice that won't get her fired?
Okay.
Less interesting.
You can't put boundaries on it like that.
Whoopee cushion.
Chandler, I want you to start us off, and then Tyler and I will go. But I'm very curious as to what you would say to this dear listener of ours.
I mean, the go-to is saran wrap on the toilets, but you have to fight over that.
At the office, at the workplace. Wow. Yeah, I think you need to go more of like Jim Halpert style. I think the key is messing with their work stuff, you know? Like I feel like I heard about someone at an office who they changed like the sound of like the email notification, or made some sort of sound like when the person like clicked their mouse, it would make like a funny like farting noise or something on the computer. That's something good. Like that. Anything to do with whoopee cushions, whether it's farting noises on the computer, let's face it, fart noises are hilarious. I don't want to sound like a child here, but no one on this podcast doesn't think it's funny objectively. I think weave that into the prank a little bit. Huck, what do you think?
I think so. This is I'm borrowing this one, but I've always wanted to see if it would actually work, because this is lifted from one of Jim's in the office. We didn't see it, but he described putting nickels in the telephone receiver, like slowly making it heavier and heavier, and then one day taking them all out so that when Dwight picked up the phone, he hit himself in the head. Stupid. I'm curious if you could actually do that. If you can pull that off. That's just helpful for me. I'm curious for my own well-being. I'd like to know if that could happen
or do this.
I like the one where he took Andy's annoying cell phone ring. Remember the annoying cell phone ring? And he took Andy's phone and put it up in the ceiling tiles. Because that, like somebody, you know, like, oh, where's my phone? I don't know. Well, then they ping it. They can, and then you hear the ping. Yeah. It's right there. Mm-hmm. It's near you. You don't know where it is, though. You call the phone, you hear it, like, where is it? I think that would be...
Walking all over the office.
Okay, walking guys, not walking all over, they keep coming back. They're there. It says it's right here. Where is it? You know.
I got a good one along those lines. This is really funny. Okay, so you go to your HR representative, and you tell them that person said horrible, offensive, politically incorrect things, and just unload on, file a report, everything, okay? Then go back to your desk, and when they get called into HR, you look at them and go, never fling a rubber chicken finger at me again. Understand? Never. Never. You have no idea who you're missing with that. You have no idea.
Leslie asked, how much of the Chili's gift card has Chandler used?
About half.
Oh, half.
Yeah.
Hey, you're a little more than halfway through the year. You are going on the frugal side of things, but not as frugal as I actually anticipated.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know. I thought you'd get a solid 4 years out of it. I really did.
How just often are you eating at Chili's these days, Chandler?
Maybe every like 3 weeks.
Okay. Yeah, he has to make special trips to like Castleberry or
close.
Yeah.
Well, I let me say this real quick. This is going to be a preview. I was going to try to get her on. I actually emailed her today and didn't get up with her. A listener messaged us, and she works at Chili's. She's a Chili's employee and was devastated to hear about your forays into the Olive Garden. And she wants to come on and give you a piece of her mind. And I said yes. That'll be happening next week, Chandler.
Great.
So he's going to give you a little talk about loyalty. You know, it was ironic. Childish Gambino did about 20 minutes on loyalty, just as a concept during the concert. Incredibly boring. But I learned some things, and now this listener will be telling you those things, Chandler.
Scott Poirier asks, what's the most insignificant topic that you hold a very strong opinion on?
Oh, I mean...
I got a lot of them.
Okay, Tyler. I mean, Tyler's into comic books, and so
I've got some trouble. I mean, that's right where my mind went.
I do got a lot of close here.
I do got a lot of them. I can jump off with a comic. I think that whenever comic books or comic book media, whenever it excludes children, necessarily excludes children, then it loses something really important about the genre. I think it should always be accessible to kids, and the Deadpools and things like that Can't really embrace the full heart of the genre.
Wait. I've never seen it. So Deadpool is not a child friendly?
It's rated R. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was at Dave and Buster's yesterday with my kid, and there was we were waiting to play a game, and there was a family playing it. So we were standing there waiting. Uh-huh. The family, mom, dad, and two children, the two boys would have been ages 7 and 12. That's okay. My guess. Mom, dad, two boys, 7 and 12. All four of them wearing matching identical Deadpool t-shirts.
Oh, wow.
So you're saying Deadpool is not appropriate for the 7 and 12.
It's a hard R. It's a very hard R.
The movie is very much a hard R. The comics sometimes are just kind of like friendly to say. He's kind of famous for like breaking the fourth wall and being sort of a satire of superhero comics in a way that can be kind of fun and just kind of like brood humor, kind of like you might see on like Comedy Central or something like that, Adult Swim. But the movie just went all the way over to a very hard R, and I think that's kind of unfortunate because it sends a really confusing message to kids to see like a character who's really colorful dressed up the way the superheroes are, but is a part of a genre they can't really get into. And I think that's yeah, I think it's confusing. I don't think it's healthy.
Well, that's a very noble thing to be annoyed about. Mine is different. And mine is dumb stuff in the sport of baseball. Let me explain. The managers wear uniforms in baseball, okay?
Right.
I've heard this
too. And that, okay, I can't be the only one who's had this take. They're wearing leather belts with the tucked in uniform, the hat. There's been coaches that wear cleats.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if a basketball coach, Greg Popovich, wore a Spurs jersey? Imagine Bill Belichick trouncing down the sidelines in full pads. Why are the managers in uniform? Like, are they going to sub into the game? Like, why? They're wearing like high tech clothes that you can slide in. The managers, what other sport? It makes it, it's so stupid. There's other stuff that annoys me about baseball too. Like, The ceremonial first pitch. It's too much ceremonial stuff. Like the uniforms, it's too much tradition. The first pitch should count. That's what I'm saying. When you have like some, you know, old
sinner
out there starting off the season, if it happens in the game, it should count. It's a pitch. And if grandpa, you know, veteran World War II hero happens to lob a meatball right down the center, and their leadoff guy wants to take a yard. Guess what? He should have put it in the dirt. The first pitch should count. And managers, stop wearing those uniforms. They're ridiculous. Some of those baseball managers are like in their 70s and they're wearing Little League uniforms. It's stupid. It's incredible. Guys, you got me all fired up here, man. I'll say this. The only cool, random, ceremonial tradition thing they do is plunking. You guys know what that is?
No.
No.
It's like if someone on one team shows up specifically a pitcher, right? So, Cameron, let's say you hit a home run, right? And you watch it leave the park. In baseball, you're supposed to just put your head down, run the bases. You're not supposed to do a bat flip. You're not supposed to stare at the pitcher. You're not even supposed to stand there and watch the ball leave the ballpark. Right. That's you know, gauche in baseball. So what happens is you get plunked, which means the next time you're at bat, the pitcher throws the ball as hard as he can right in your rib cage, and you just got to sit there and take it. This I've seen this happen. I've seen a pitcher do this because a hitter hit a home run, watch it go out of the park, and the batter did not come back up to the plate before the end of the game. A year went by. Literally the next season, the first time that batter goes up, he knows he's getting plunked. You just see him there standing in the box and the pitcher wail him. A year had gone by. It's insane. It's dangerous. And I love it. I love it. There's nothing like it in sports. It's holding grudges. It's not just holding grudges. It's like, well, I kind of let that go. But honestly, you know the rules here. I have to throw it in your rib cage as hard as I can. Hard baseball that I can throw 100 miles an hour. It's stupid, but I love it. I love it.
Cody Jensen says, I just moved to Portland. I want to fit in with the locals. What should I do to culturally assimilate?
Oh, well, I've watched a lot of Portlandia. And so, I think this is the listener's name?
Cody Jensen.
Cody. Okay. Here's the thing, Cody. I think people in Portland have like a really high radar for people riding around funny looking bicycles and, you know, eating, drinking kombucha. I don't even know what that is. And, you know,
fermented. It's like a fermented drink. That's like healthy.
Some disgusting. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. And planning community gardens and stuff. Go the opposite way. That's, you want to fit in. Portland's a city where weirdos fit in the best. Right. So be the way. I would buy like a gas guzzling muscle car for one.
Oh.
I would wear, you know, khakis. I would wear, and, you know, look very straight laced.
That's interesting.
I would be,
it's
I would
theory,
go against what you think Portland.
Yeah. Cause
is.
Like the rebellion against the mainstream, you know, well, if everybody becomes like that, then it's now the mainstream.
That doesn't
so
work
you're
at
saying
all.
Yeah. Start a new countercultural trend against the countercultural trend, which has now just become the cultural trend.
Exactly.
I like
exactly. it. Exactly. Swing it back. Like, basically, make Portland more like the Midwest. You know, that's the only place it has to go at this point. I mean, it looks like, you know.
Dude, that's true. I mean, like, downtown Boise is trying to look like Portland. You know, every coffee shop is trying to do the Pacific Northwest thing. How is Portland going to stay ahead of that? You go normcore.
Switch the vibe. Exactly. Yeah. Go exactly. pulling that Kansas City energy. The Des Moines, Iowa.
If and that it starts work, with Cody Jensen.
If that doesn't work, wear a baseball a uniform of professional baseball player. You're going to look ridiculous. Some people will love it.
Evan Penn says he's moving very soon and is stressed and anxious about it. What's the best way to find good housing and schmooze landlords into putting you at the top of their wait list?
I like this. I like this a lot. So I'm assuming, you know, I mean, the obvious choice is bribery, right? But, you know, I don't know. I don't know his budgetary restraints there. But the other thing is I would do what I do when I have a problem with a coworker.
What's that?
Which is, but instead of calling the HR rep, I would call the landlord and I would say, hey, I've heard some other people on that list for this house that says some very offensive, politically incorrect things. We need to write them up and get them off. We don't need troublemakers in here. I think the best thing to do if you need to feel yourself built up and feel good and let other people feel good about you is to put others down. That's easy, right, guys? Am I right? That's great advice, huh?
I think you sabotage the landlord first so you can get a little bit of blackmail. I think you want to bribe. So I think you release like 50 rats into the complex you're just sitting moving in on. You photograph that. You make sure that you've got that documented. And then you go to this landlord and you say, I would hate for the Department of Health and Human Services to hear about this. But as a good citizen, I can't in good conscience not tell them. I sure wish somebody would help me make this decision a little bit easier. I think your landlord will pick up right away what you're laying down.
I like that blackmail idea because that's the other thing. Like I've always wanted to do the heist thing in the movies. I've also wanted to do a sophisticated blackmail plot in the movies, which we all know how these things go. You meet them at a park. You're wearing dark sunglasses. Mm-hmm. You slide over the manila envelope. You're like, I'd like to take a look at those pictures. And they just like thumbing through them. It's just the rat pictures, you know? And then they're like, oh my gosh.
Their jaws drop. They're turning
pale. No one
can
see this. And they try to hand them back. When they try to hand them back, you just look at them and you go, oh no, I've got plenty of other copies. Why don't you just hang on to those? Yeah, I love that. I would be into that, Tyler.
Amelia asks, I was given a large poster of Nicolas Cage's face from a coworker.
Excellent.
What's my next move?
Oh my gosh. It's like the final move.
But the coworker wins?
Well, yeah, I think everybody wins in this. I feel like we all came out on top.
I think you got to just keep one-upping the Nicolas Cage-ness. So she gave you a poster. That's fine. What's that, $4? You can go online and get things printed onto throw pillows, tapestries, and blankets. Mm-hmm. I'm saying you keep going larger. She gave you a poster, you give her a throw pillow. And then she's going to one-up your Nicolas Cage, and then you're going to give her a wall tapestry of his face. We have one at our office, actually. I think we have a life-size cutout of Nicolas Cage. I think you can go that route. I think you just got to keep one-upping the Nicolas Cages.
Yeah, and I think along those lines, I would be willing to set up a crowdfunding page for this if she'd be willing to do it. And here's what you need to do. Yeah. If we're willing to crowdfund the money for one of those car wraps, You know what I'm talking about? Where you wrap your entire car and it's like becomes like a rolling mural. If we were able to design one that's just like millions of Nicolas Cages, if she would commit to like overnight sneaking into her coworker's driveway and installing the car wrap, I think that would be something I'd like to see, is that car driving down the road, you know?
Yep. Eric Yoder says, what is hot girl summer? And how can I ensure that I am or am not having one or it?
Tyler, I feel like you're our Twitter expert. I saw this trending this morning. Why don't you unpack this?
Well, Haim's new single is Hot Girl Summer. And so he's very concerned to know what it is and how does he know if he is having one or not having one?
I think it started from a rap song, didn't it? It was a lyric in a rap
song.
Started
from what?
I don't remember which rapper it was.
I think Haim was late to the party.
Interesting.
I think their single is called Summer Girl. So it's an allusion. It's a reference. It's an homage. But I think as far as I can tell, and Chandler, maybe you can, but I feel like Hot Girl Summer just kind of means you're living. It's the girls living their best lives over the summer. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, this isn't a swimsuit catalog thing or anything. It just means that you're feeling yourself. It's what we're talking about at the beginning of the pod today. You're just having a really good, solid summer. So I think you can answer that question just by waking up in the morning, walking into the bathroom, looking in the mirror, and what do you see looking back at you? Are you happy with the person you're looking at? And if you are,
I'm going to just stop you. This is terrible advice. What you need to do is wear the uniform of a professional baseball player. When people ask you why you're wearing it, you just go, it's hot girl summer, you know, hot girl summer. And just walk away wearing your baseball uniform. It'll make sense. And move to Portland. There you go.
Megan Stallion, that's who coined it.
Was it Megan the Stallion? So she's having a hot girl summer. You kind of confessed early on, Cameron, you don't feel like you're having a hot girl summer.
I mean, summer's like over. My kids started school yesterday. And I'm like, what happened? Yeah, I didn't do anything. I mean, Jesse and I went to Lollapalooza last week for a couple of days. But I mean,
it's pretty good.
I mean, I had 2 days out of 3 months.
You swam a lot.
I floated.
Yeah.
That's good.
Floating does not sound very good. So I'm not going to lie.
I floated myself
floating
on a Sunday afternoon in my pool.
Napping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hot girl fall is right around the corner. And I think that you know, opportunity, there's another opportunity there.
Yeah. You got that's the PSL life. The pumpkin spice life is in the fall. You know, you transition from hot girl summer to living the PSL life, you know.
it's a little tougher because you have to actually be drinking pumpkin spice lattes, and I don't wish that on anybody, but that's the demand.
Yeah, but you slide into those yoga pants, put on that comfy oversized sweater, and just enjoy the life. Rock that new Mumford and Sons album and just love that life.
Not Mumford, Bon Iver, come on.
There's a new Bon Iver out today.
Well, no, I'm saying
streamlines your hot girl fall.
Yeah, Bon Iver's too sophisticated for hot girls.
Oh, really?
For the PSL.
Oh, PSL? Wow.
What do you think the new Taylor?
The new Taylor Swift?
There you go. You could rock some Tay Tay.
All right.
Yeah,
that's probably pretty good.
That would play. That would play in the PSL world. Yeah.
Well, many thanks for everybody who tweeted us questions. That'll do it for. If you got something you want to know, now's the time to ask. It's Ask the Cast. We'll do it again next week. That was a lot of fun. Many thanks to Matt Carney for joining us. His new EP, City of Black and White Revisited, is out now. Check it out. And it's Matt. That's Matt Carney, not.
Yeah, I do want to thank Matt Carney for he did a quote unquote favor for me. That's a little outside the law, Matt the Carney. You know what you did, and I appreciate it, bro.
Stupid.
I owe you.
Thanks also to Quip for making the show possible. Remember, Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/relevant right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. Go do it. Hey, season 2 of Unedited, our long-form conversation podcast, is out now. The new episode with Shauna Nyquist will go up on Monday. Yeah. And if you haven't heard the debut episode with Christine Kane, make sure to go download it wherever you get your podcasts. Speaking of wherever you get your podcasts, if you like the Relevant podcast, make sure to head over there and leave a review and maybe throw a few stars at it. Maybe all 5. Hey, and those of you who think you're funny by doing a 1-star review and then putting a joke little review, that really screws with the show. Please don't do that.
Hilarious.
Not funny.
Hilarious. I love it. I live for it. gets a chuckle out of me every time.
Yeah, I'll say this. When kidding. I see the one star, it literally hurts my feelings. It's like, what did I do? Yeah. You know what's worse than a one star is a four star. Because you're always, because at least with the one star, it just wasn't for them.
Or
you know?
They're trying to make,
with
yeah.
the four star, they liked the it, but star, something we was off. And that's we like, that's what bothers me. It's like when you go to the fast food store. The
fast food store.
Like a, You guys go to the sock hops and the burger joints. No, when you're riding through the fast food line and they have the health department rating on the wall, yeah. it always bothers me when it's like an A minus. Like if I walk into like a C facility, yeah. it's like, okay, this place is just gross. The A minus is like, what happened? Where was the hair found? There was only one hair that knocked it from an A to A minus. Where was that hair found? That's what the four stars.
One rat turd. Not a bunch of them. Just one.
Where was it?
On the mayonnaise lid.
Yeah.
But not on the floor.
It turned out Tyler was just blackmailing the owner of the restaurant with that, but still.
He's trying to get the lease.
I wanted them to bring back spicy chicken fingers.
But fling them at your coworker. All right. Well, on that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Chandler Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Tyler Huckabee.
Make sure to tune in on Tuesday. Big Cat is back in town his summer adventures. All right, have a good weekend, everyone. We'll see you Tuesday. Will you tell me what it really means? So wake up alive and free. Thank you for listening to The Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe. Let's face it, fart noises are hilarious. Relevant Podcast Network.